Welcome to another edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Renaissance man Oliver Lake. Along with being a jazz saxophonist, flutist, and composer, he's a very accomplished poet, painter, and performance artist. His latest album with his quartet is called What I Heard, and it's another brilliant release from a man that covers so much creative ground during his life, it's almost staggering. During his discussion with Neon Jazz, he talked about relishing being one of the greats in jazz and looking over a very fulfilling life of art and jazz. Enjoy it.
Thank you for taking a little time to talk to Neon Jazz. I really appreciate it. First of all, your latest album with the quartet, What I Heard, is an amazing listen. Can you talk to me a little bit about the creative process that went into that album?
Well, you know, the very first part of it is the fact that I'm surrounded by some incredible young players. Jerry Gold on the organ is a sensational organist, and Freddie Hendrix on trumpet, and Chris Beck on drums. Just starting from that point, it was almost like anything I write, they're going to make it come out incredible, and I really feel that we did accomplish that on this particular CD.
Right on. What else has been going on with you lately? You're a Renaissance man. You have art, poetry, and music. What's going on lately?
Well, Trio 3, we with Reggie Workman, Andrew Sorrell, and myself, we just finished playing the Winterfest about 2 weeks ago, and my organ quartet also played on that Winterfest in New York, Winter Jazz Fest. And coming up with Trio 3 we'll be gone for a week into the Village Vanguard on March 24th through 29th.
Very cool.
Yeah, and next 2 days from now, on the 12th of February, I have the art side of me. I will have an art opening reception in Newark at the Algira Gallery. There will be showing my sticks there. And I'm continuing to compose for my big band, 17-piece big band.
Very
and
cool.
Looking forward to these upcoming gigs with Trio 3.
Right on. So you were born in Arkansas and moved to St. Louis. What was it about St. Louis that really fostered this level of creativity between the arts and jazz for you?
Well, you know, my experience there with the Black Artist Group, I always look at the Black Artist Group as being my school, where not only did I teach there, but I was also learning from the other artists that were there and the students that were a part of it. So when the Black Artist Group started in 1968, I think is the year it started, it consisted of over 50 artists, musicians, dancers, poets, writers, visual artists, and so forth. And that happening in St. Louis was so unique, and that's what's kind of shaped my career throughout the years,
so
that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed that at 17 you got interested in jazz. Was there a breakthrough artist or album that really opened the portals in your head that, man, this is it?
Well, I think it was my surroundings, because I was in a drum and bugle corps, and I was playing cymbals and playing bass drum, and there were other young, aspiring young jazz musicians in that ensemble, in that marching band, that inspired me and made me really want to get started on playing the alto saxophone. But I can't say that there was one specific record or recording that inspired me. I think it was being exposed to all of that, you know, and the live playing of the musicians who were in that marching group.
Absolutely. So, you know, you're a visual artist, you're a poet, you're a musician, you're a composer and arranger. How do you keep all of those things separated enough, yet to coexist in such a way that you're so good at all of them simultaneously?
Well, you know, I think of myself as a musician who happens to paint and write poetry. I never think of myself, I don't think I've ever thought of myself as being primarily a painter or a poet, but I do incorporate those into my performances in some way, using poetry or spoken word. And then with the painting, I've created several of my album covers and so many album covers for Intact Records, which Trio 3 is a part of Intact Records, which is based out of Switzerland.
So do you get nervous the same way you would when you play music, like when you have an art opening? Is that same level of adrenaline and kind of a rush that you get?
I think so. There's probably not as much on a performance, because basically what I'm doing, and some of my artist openings I do perform in solo, but on this particular one that I'm opens on Thursday, I'm not performing. I'm just going there and talking about my work and meeting people who may potentially be buyers of the art.
Right on. So you've collaborated with a lot of different people across different genres of music, Bjork, Lou Reed, Mos Def, and it goes on and on and on here. Do you sometimes get into that mode that Miles Davis talked about, where it's not jazz, it's music, or do you feel more particular towards jazz? What's kind of your thought on that?
You know, throughout my career, I've tried to be open to all forms and styles of music, and I've formed different bands throughout my years, which the music that has inspired me and that I love. And if it crosses genres, so be it. And it's kind of like what Duke Ellington said. There's only one music. That's good. There's only two kinds of music, the good kind and the bad kind.
Yeah.
And I'm remaining to be a very open to all forms and styles. One of my sons is a drummer, Gene Lake, who plays with several prominent jazz artists throughout the years. Another one of my sons, Jahi Lake, is a DJ, and he keeps me informed of all of the latest hip-hop music that's going on. And as a result of that, I've arranged several hip-hop pieces for my 17-piece big band. So my thing is just trying to remain open to everything, listen to as many different styles. And if something comes up that I really love doing it, that I really like, then I'm not that far away from trying to do that myself.
Right on. You know, so let's, speaking of Duke's moniker of good and bad music, I would say some of the best music has been the World Saxophone Quartet. How did that come about? Kind of talk to me a little bit about that.
Wow, we're going back a long time now.
Yeah.
I started around 1976. And, Ed Kid Jordan, who was based in New Orleans, a saxophonist, you may have heard of him. He came to New York and heard all four of us, Julius Hemphill, Hammett Blewett, David Murray, and myself, with our different ensembles. And he wanted to bring us to New Orleans to play, but he couldn't bring all of our ensembles. So he asked the four of us to come to play with a New Orleans rhythm section. And we went and did that concert, and as a result of that concert, the reaction was so tremendous and so mind-blowing, not only for the audience but for us, that when we came back to New York, we said we have to keep this group together. And that was how the Saxophone Quartet was born. We actually got in an argument about who's going to play bass, who's going to play drums, who's going to play piano, and then eventually somebody said, let's just do it without rhythm section. Let's do it with the four saxophones. And then that's how the World Saxophone Quartet was born. But actually, when we started out as the World, we started with a different name. We started with the New York Saxophone Quartet.
Ah, gotcha.
And then we found out there was a group in town with the same name. So then we called ourselves the Real New York Saxophone Quartet. And we got a letter from their lawyer, cease and desist. So it was at that time we decided to give them New York, and we became the World Saxophone Quartet.
Right on. So during your life, you've had a voracious amount of creativity. Is there a period of your life, I mean, since we kind of stepped back with the World Saxophone Quartet, is there a period of your life where you think, man, things were just going crazy at that time? I grew so much.
Well, you know, a lot of these things were going on simultaneously. At the peak of the World Saxophone Quartet, I had another group called Jump Up, which was very busy and very active simultaneously. So that was really a very active time for me, because I was going from long tours with my group Jump Up, and then doing going directly to a long tour with the World Saxophone Quartet, and that period went on for quite a while. So that kind of stands out in my memory as a very busy time for me. Creatively, I'm hoping to grow, hoping that I grew throughout all those periods and continue to grow even for the next future time.
Excellent. Who are your heroes? Artistic, jazz, visual arts, poets? Who stands out in your head as real heroes that have motivated you to do what you do?
Well, for music, it's Eric Dolphy has always been one of my favorites. And Duke Ellington, another favorite in terms of composition and inspiration for writing compositions. And so many black writers and composers and visual artists, without trying to name them specifically. Again, I look at all of the artists who have come before me and writers and so forth. And I work with Intasaka Shange, who was a very strong poet who had a play on Broadway years ago. She's been a big inspiration to me in terms of my writing. And Amir Baraka, I worked with several times, and he's also been a big inspiration. So it goes on. I mean, there's so many greats of the past, and my contemporaries to be inspired by.
So speaking of those of the past, is there anybody, musician or visual arts, poetry, that you would love to have sat down with and talked to if you could go into a time machine?
Wow. Well, I think I go back to Eric Dolphy. I always wanted to meet him, and I never had the opportunity to meet him. When I moved to New York from St. Louis, he was gone, and I never had the opportunity, and I always wanted to meet him. So he stands out as number one for me.
Right on. You know, I would say without a doubt, you're a giant of jazz. Do you like to have that stature, being a well-known jazz musician in America?
Oh, of course. I never think of myself in that way till I hear someone else say it, but it's always good to reach that kind of stature. And I know the alternative for not reaching this stature, which means that I'm here, and that I'm, grateful for the opportunity to continue to be creative and looking forward to it and having a great time in the various ensembles and writing and composing and painting and having a great time.
So is there anybody out there in the world that you haven't played with? You play with a lot of people, compose for a lot. Is there anybody out there specifically that you would love to play with at some point?
Yeah, Cecil Taylor. I know Cecil, and I've known him for years, but we've never played together before. And I've always wanted to play in any combination with Cecil, either as a duo or in his group or in any shape or form, and it has not happened yet, but there's still potential for it to happen.
What's the greatest thing about waking up every day?
Waking up. The sun is shining. I did it.
Amen.
No, that's all I need for inspiration and say, okay, it's a great day. I'm up.
You've been kind of clear about this, but I guess I'm going to ask it in a different way. What's left for you to accomplish in such a celebrated, multifaceted, creative career that you've had?
Well, I have the 17-piece big band, and then every time I sit down to compose for that band, and I think that I'm trying to expand the limits on the vocabulary of the big band, then I do some research and find out that Duke Ellington has already written that.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's just to keep pushing the envelope musically with composition, keep pushing the envelope with my saxophone playing and the various groups that I'm a part of.
Very cool. So how do you want the world to remember Oliver Lake?
I have not really thought about it. I think the strongest thing for me is that I'm a person who loves, and yeah. I love the music, and I love performing, and I love the audience. So I just think, I will hope my name would be synonymous with love.
Right on. Perfect. Oliver, you're a class act, man. I appreciate you taking some time out.
Okay, Joe. Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to the legendary Oliver Lake for his ability to move every piece of the artistic clock. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things neon jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.